Welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. And I think Barb's getting out of yoga, so I'm going to make this quick and see if I could get some discussion in. So funny thing happened today is we were discussing what books to pick. And it was Rob's turn, and Rob says, "Let's cover Atari Force." And I was like, "Is Atari Force available on Comixology so I could get to it?" And I looked at, I got my database, and it said I didn't have it. However, God, I remembered having it. So if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I told you all I have one closet full of uninventoried comic books. And Chris Ivey knows what I'm talking about. He's been here in the guest bedroom, and that's where I found it. I mean, I went through four long boxes, six short boxes before I got to like the eighth short box on the other side, and I found a group of comic books that were in. They were all bagged and boarded, but they were in there like a big plastic thing. And I had a suspicion that the Atari Force was in there because I told you I used to inventory funky. Like I had done such a shitty job inventorying. I had this cool database and everything. And what I would do is I would inventory what I read, but that makes no fucking sense. The best, and I've changed philosophies for about, I don't know, it's been about 6, 7 years. So I inventory what I get when I get it, and that's important because you could accidentally buy something you don't have, and if you archive it right away, you won't have that problem. Well, my database didn't have Atari Force in it, but my brain says, God, you have Atari Force. And I even remember where it came from. There was one convention that we went to, and I can't remember if Keith Knutson shipped this to me or if he gave it to me at a convention, but I know it came from him. There was a this bag, and it had a Led Zeppelin comic book, which is really bad. I mean, I haven't read it, but it's not even almost like a comic book. It's like somebody like doodling sketches, and they're not even panels, but I'll have to read it at some point in time and see what it is, but it's called Rock Fantasy number 3, and it features Led Zeppelin. This is when they were doing rock and roll comic books, and man, this is really bad. But I'll have to check it out at some point. But this came with that one, and then the rest of them were Atari Force. And this is when Keith was trying to show me his love for Garcia Lopez. Which he's awesome because he did a lot of these things. So I found Atari Force and we may cover it. We couldn't cover number one, and number one I had in the inventory because I read it. But the rest of them I did not, but I did find it. And I'll be able to cover that. I'm gonna have to break away for a while, but I hope to come back in a little bit. Bye. And I'm back. It was false alarms. She's not here yet. So I'm gonna talk a little bit more. Something I did is I'm a mood reader. So I went downstairs looking for something, and I can't remember what. I think it was a Wildcats. So I was trying to get caught up on the Wildcat, not the Wildcats, the Wildstorm, and I was going through some boxes of unread books, and I ran across Bloodlines, and I was like, I forgot this even came out. And Bloodlines was J.T. Kroll. I'm gonna get you the creative team because they're really, really good. J.T. Kroll, who I know very well from his, Green Arrow run, and he did Captain Atom on the New 52. He did a lot of other stuff. He's been doing stuff for Aspen lately, and I don't know what else he's been doing. He's kind of like fallen out of the limelight for a while. But Bloodlines came out right before Rebirth, and If you look for Bloodlines, there's the Bloodlines by Aerosel, but that's not that one. That came out from 1985 to 1987. And then there's Bloodlines DC, which came out in 2016, right before the rebirth. So it was like when New 52 was ending. And I was really surprised to see this. Matter of fact, the artist is J. Ken Marion. And he has some previous work on All New Soulfire and Journey. And J.T. Krull did both of those. So J.T. Krull already knew him from Aspen. And he brought him over here. I'm not too familiar with Soulfire. I think I read one of them. And it was in the fantasy realm, so I stayed away. Journey I did buy, and I liked it. But I've only read like one or two of them. I never finished it. So this guy mimics J. Scott Campbell, and it's like a style that's in that vein. Either that, it's a cross between J. Scott Campbell and Michael Turner. So he comes from that kind of class. And the interesting thing about Bloodlines is Bloodlines was an annual event, and it was a fantastic annual event in my opinion, that ran in DC Comics annuals that year. And it didn't have a lot of the thing that they were trying to do with Bloodlines is inject new characters into the DC universe and get a lot of first appearances and a lot of excitement that was going on. But none of it really kicked off. So the big one that came out of it was Hitman. That was like the big success. There were a lot of different characters in the Bloodlines roster. Some of them had their own series. I believe Argus had one. Anamia had one. She appeared in New Titans Annual. Argus appeared in Flash Annual number 6. There was Ballistic. Batman Annual number 17, Cardinal Sin, Dark Knight Annual number 3, Chimera, Teen Titans Annual number 1, Edge, Superman Man of Steel number 2. And if you don't, if any of them, the only one that had their series was Animea and Argus, I believe. And Argus was in Blood Pack too. And they appeared elsewhere too. Geist, he's actually in this book. He was in Detective Comics Annual number 6. Gunfire, there's a character that's like him, but this book is so interesting. He had his own series. Hitman had his own series. That was the successful one that appeared in Demon Annual number 2. Gunfire was Deathstroke Annual number 2. Hook was Green Arrow Annual number 6. Jam was Legion of Superheroes Annual number 4. Joe Public was Batman Shadow of the Bat Annual number 1. Krag was Justice League of America Annual number 1. Layla was in Lobo. Lionheart was in Justice League International number 4. Loose Cannon also had his own series, one of my favorites. Action Comics Annual number 5. Loria was in Showcase 94 number 12. Mongrel, Hawkman Annual number 1. Myrid, Superman Annual number 5. Nightblade, Green Lantern number 2, Pax Legion Annual number 4, Prism, El Calypso Annual number 1, Razor Sharp, Robin Annual number 2, Shadow Strike, Justice League of America Annual number 7, Slingshot, that was Justice League of America Annual number 7 too. So there were several of them in Annual number 7. Sparks also appears in this comic book. Adventures of Superman Annual number 5. Terror Smith is Justice League of America Annual number 7. So a lot of them were in a team that fought the Justice League or were in the book. Another thing that spawned out. So I mentioned some that had their own series: Gunfire, Hitman, Argus, Anima. It sounds like you get an enema, but Anima, like animal, Anima. No, Ballistic didn't have one. Loose Cannon was the other one. And then they had Blood Pack. And I have all these books. I was a big fan of this stuff. It really was awesome to me. And then they brought these back to the New 52. And it was like towards the end, which is really weird. But they launched it. The series is so good. Let me give you the premise of these annuals is these aliens came down and they bit people. They killed a lot of people, but they bit people, and certain people that didn't have powers but had a metagene, it like sparked off their metagene, and then they got powers, and that's these characters. And didn't really have much success with the trying to instill new life in the DC universe, but the reason I mention it is because they're doing it again with New Age of Heroes. DC's trying to invigorate a new line off the metal, Dark Knight Metal series, and they have a whole bunch of new characters. Some of them like are characters that existed, but it's more of an artistic view of characters like they were in the 90s. So this should be a lot of fun. And Blood Pack, sorry, this Bloodlines actually did that, so I wanted to mention it. And there's a they appeared in other things. They appeared in Infinite Crisis. There were other places they appeared. Bloodline Aliens, a couple of other things. JLA Hitman crossover, of course, because of Hitman. They've been around. In New 52, they tried to bring them back to life, and they did it really good. It was really exciting, and it was cool because there are a bunch of characters that didn't know each other, and they're in this town, and they're so different. It's like Breakfast Club with some of the kids at high school. It's like they didn't like each other, you know? And there was one kid that was handicapped, that was, Loose Cannon. He has like some like muscular dystrophy or something to that effect. He's on the walkers. He needs them to help him walk. Those arm contraptions that you put on your wrists and just help you walk. And he has a best friend that's on the football team. And they really focus on him in issue one. And he has a difficult time. Like he's trying to fit in. He's tired of his body failing him. It's documented. Like he wants to do so much, but he can't. And his best friend is, God bless his heart, like he's a football star. And he takes care of him. He makes sure he gets a ride to school. He makes sure he does stuff. A matter of fact, he picks him up one day and he says, "Why did you start walking?" And he goes, "I prove myself I can do it on my own without you picking me up every day from school." And one day they go out to like this party, and he's real hesitant because he doesn't fit in. But his best friend takes him there because his best friend looks after him. And an alien comes out. It looks like it's partial deer, like a parasite had taken into this deer, and it actually bites him, and it kills a bunch of other people, and it bites his best friend and kills him. But Loose Cannon, he becomes Loose Cannon and gets these special powers. And a lot of things happen to this. Like Geist is a smart kid, so it's like at that Breakfast Club thing. He's the one that's real intelligent. Geist can turn invisible. Sparks has the electric power. One of them has these can generate energy. I don't know who it maps to here. And then there's one guy that had killed his son and wife because they turned into these aliens. And they introduce these bad guys. One of them is like that creepy kid from the Twilight Zone that has these powers, and she'll like go like with other families and end up killing them. They set her up as a villain, but they never ever get there. And at the end of the series, they show her killing more people. The thing that I liked is these aliens, they had a these parasites land, and they actually got into their spines, all these characters. It killed a lot of people, but the ones that took, and it's taking over their body, and that's why that one hunter wants to kill all of them, because he saw his wife and son turn into a monster, so he's there hunting them. The thing that's interesting about this series, Bloodlines, is They never tell you who these characters are, so you'll like never know what their names are. Like you'll know who their character names are, but that's like their high school name, but you won't know like anything. Like the guy's gonna be called Loose Cannon unless you've had this history, because it does. They never give each other code names or anything. The only thing that you see is that he has a skateboard that says Loose Cannon on it, and you kind of get an idea of some of these characters. Oh, Razor Sharp was the other one. She's a female that was dating a cop, and she was a mechanic. And they were having sexual relationships. She was working on his car. They both got bit. The cop ended up getting consumed by the alien entity, and there's like this priest alien that's bringing his flock and stuff and infecting him. He's got like this power to contaminate people around him, and he's contaminating almost the whole town. But anyway, the whole town almost is devastated by this event, and a few of the Bloodlines characters, we can call them Blood Pack for the most part, is they know that they're eventually going to be consumed by these parasites and become bad people. And they'll have to be killed. It's almost like if you got bit by a zombie and your time was limited. That's what this bloodline characters are like. They know that unless they can find a cure, they're gonna get consumed like the cop did, and they had to kill him. Matter of fact, Razor Sharp is the one that ended up killing, the one she ended up killing the cop because she knew he was consumed and there was no turning back. So, oh man, if you loved Bloodlines like I did, this series will really click with you. And it's a reimagining. It's not like it's taking back what pre-52 had in it. It was like take these characters and reimagine them. And it would have been a fantastic series, but nobody bought it. And we're lucky that DC gave it 6 issues and stuck with those 6 issues. But man, even though it had a conclusion where they go on the road together, it left so many open-ended issues that are going to remain unanswered. But I'll have to tell JT Krull, man, that he really kicks some butt. And check it out if you get a chance. The Bloodlines, it's only 6 issues. If it sounds interesting to you, it's like the New Age of Heroes. That's kind of like what's going to be happening with DC in just a little bit. And I'm going to have to go now, and I will come back later. Okay, I'm back. So that I talked about Bloodlines, and it reminded me, like, in terms of Armageddon, like Armageddon 2001, very good annual event. It was an annual event that crossed over a lot of titles, just like Bloodlines. And this was cool because it introduced a lot of cool characters, a lot of diversity in characters, too. So if you get a chance, I don't know if you could find Bloodlines collected, like the annuals. It'd be nice if they did. I haven't checked in Comixology if you could find them, but I somehow doubt it. But yeah, I started reading Blood Pack and Animea, and I can never pronounce it, but that was kind of a weird one. I started reading and I don't know if I liked it or not, but all the other ones like Gunfire and everything, I really enjoyed in Blood Pack. So I have completed all of my Bloodlines, so this was a good cap, and I think it like reinvigorated it, but too bad. Nobody gives a shit about anything unless it's popular. Like the only time like a book like this would stand a chance is, it had two names on it that, JT Krull had some hits, but he's not like a guy that's gonna drive a lot of people to his work, and this artist did a damn fine job. But unless it was like Jim Lee, and then even if it was Jim Lee and he was doing like the Wildstorm, it still wouldn't sell that much, 'cause people buy what they're comfortable with, and it's Batman. in Justice League, and all the big heavy hitters they'll stick with. They very seldom give these things a shot. But it would have probably been okay if, like, all the people that were collecting comics during Bloodlines decided to buy this. But it probably was less than 10,000 coming out of the gate. And it might not have even registered towards the end. And it would be interesting to look at the sales numbers of where it did end up. I'd be really curious. And I'll probably look it up after I'm done recording this, just to see where it was. And I also finished getting caught up on the Wildstorm Michael Kray, and it's interesting that they went with that title too, because I think it would have sold to more people if they would have said the Wildstorm Deathblow, because people would have been more apt to buy something that said Deathblow rather than Michael Kray. But those who've been around long enough know that it's one and the same. And he was one of the most interesting characters to me in the Wildstorm, because he was very, very sick and ill. And if you hear chewing, it's because Harley's chewing her bone right underneath me. He was like dying. He's like dying, and he it doesn't say in the Wildstorm what's happening, other than there's the Trelane, a female, is recruiting him for her organization, and it seems like he did turn down Io. And in doing so, they went after to kill him, and that's when this organization picked him up. And they seem to be like one of the organizations that is in between this big war between Earth and space, which is Stormwatch. And then you have the Wildcats, which is Halo, in kind of in the middle as well. And who kicked off this big old melee was the engineer. She stole the technology from Io, and Io had stolen it from Stormwatch, and it gets really convoluted, but it could start a war, and that's what it looks like, what's going to happen. But anyway, this series is interesting because it's looking at all of the DC counterparts. And so far, Michael Kray is recruited to be their lead assassin, and he has like four team members that are there to help him out. And the first person he's supposed to take out is Green Arrow, Oliver Queen. And what it turns out is, on this Earth, these guys, these DC heroes are real assholes. Green Arrow is still a rich guy, but he hunts humans. Like, he'll take the humans, like old veterans or people he thinks that will give him competition. He takes them to the island and like does human hunting and hunts them down. And Michael Kray goes undercover as a vet, and he gets recruited by him, and he gets hunted down by Oliver Queen. And what you learn in these Michael Kray books is he's got a power manifesting, and the doctors are trying to cure him or trying to help him. She realizes that this power is instigated either by anger or duress, or they haven't quite figured it out yet. And it's getting to be really powerful, so if you touch him, like he just like Oliver Queen touched him, and he like burned off his arm. His whole arm, one of his whole arms was gone, and then the sniper that's on his team ended up shooting him. But then the next character that's in this is Barry Allen, and he's a sort of a bad guy in this world too, because he's out to kill people that are inventing AI, sorry. Artificial intelligence, and he doesn't care if you're young or old or a student or whatever, but if he finds out you're doing IA and he's got like this speed suit, a technological speed suit, and Trelane's organization is trying to figure out how to get that technology, so they send Deathblow after him. And the final character, which they haven't concluded, is Arthur Curry, Aquaman. So, and it also looks like he is going to be a bad guy. So it's interesting how this series is panning out. Really interesting. So, yeah, that's kind of like what I wanted to talk about. There was also, I was listening to Nerdy Legion, one of the podcasts I always listen to, and it got me thinking. They were talking about movies, like, and from an interesting aspect, like the most times you've rewatched a movie, it doesn't have to be the best movie, but the most rewatchable movies. And I got to thinking, and I was like, holy crap, you know? I rewatched Top Gun a lot. I rewatched Superman 3 a lot, more so than the other Supermans, which is really weird, but I can't take my eyes away from that for some reason. It's like a tribute to the Silver Age, and I just love it. Iron Man 3, I love, which isn't popular with a lot of people, but I've already seen it like a lot, like rewatchable. Porky's, when I was younger, I watched that movie so many times, man. And American Pie, all of those movies I've watched so many times. I like those Porky's and American Pie movies. I find them very funny and have good stories too. Almost all the John Hughes movies, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club. Any of those I've watched so many freaking times. The Gods Must Be Crazy. Like, I saw this at the theater with my basketball. Well, I was on the basketball team with a few of my basketball friends, and we'd never laughed so hard with that movie. And I had seen it so many times after that. What else? There's just so many movies that aren't real popular that I've watched a lot. Of course, Star Wars is on there. I've seen it a lot. Batman 89, it's the one Batman movie I could rewatch over and over and over again and not get sick of it. Superman 2 is the same thing. Even though Empire Strikes Back is my favorite, I haven't seen it as much as these other movies. I have a feeling that Rogue One is going to be a one that I rewatch a lot. I've already seen it 3 times. And I think I'm gonna keep watching it because I really like that movie. But there's a lot of movies that I've seen so many times. Private Eyes with Don Knotts and Tin Conway. I recorded that off of HBO when on a VCR tape, and I've seen that so many freaking times. Another one that I recorded that I saw a lot was Southern Comfort. That's an interesting movie. It's about a National Guard unit that go into the Louisiana Bayou, and they're armed on this drill with blanks. And one of the dumbasses decides he's gonna shoot at these Cajuns, and the whole movie is about those Cajuns hunting down the National Guardsmen and killing every one of them. So that's another one. Oh, the Three Musketeers and the Three Musketeers, the Four Musketeers, the Salkind films. Alexander, the guy who did Superman, the producers, they did the Michael York, Richard Chamberlain, all those awesome actors in the Musketeers. I've seen those so many freaking times. And I don't know what it is about Michael York movies, but when he's on something, I will watch the hell out of it. Like Logan's Run is another one that I'll just watch over and over and over again. Sanctuary, and never get sick of it. But yeah, that was an interesting conversation, and I really got me thinking as I was driving, like, what are the movies that are most rewatchable, not necessarily my favorites. The Rocketeer is another one, but that one is one of my favorites. To me, The Rocketeer is the perfect hero movie. It's like got the heart. If you ever want to capture the heart of a hero, it's The Rocketeer. I have a feeling John Carter, Warlord of Mars, even though it's just called John Carter, is going to be one of those ones that I watch over and over again. I'm a sucker for The Boys in the Hood. I'll watch it over and over again. Any of those sports movies like Hoosiers, love them. Like, I love that movie. I've seen that one so many freaking times. Varsity Blues, another sports movie. Whipped Cream Bikini. I've seen that one at least, man, it's got to be in the 20 times already. So, yeah, there's some. And a lot of them, like, I'll just turn to a station and they'll be on and I'll just finish watching it. So if you don't include the full watches, if you include all the half watches, I've watched these things a lot of times. I'm a sucker for sports movies. The Vegas, the Chevy Chase, National Lampoon's Vacation movies. I've seen them so many freaking times. Christmas Vacation, I think, leads the way. I've seen that one so many times. But I'm already approaching the 30-minute mark, so let me get off to the weekly reads. This was February 20th through February 26th. Again, I use the old Netflix ratings. 5, I love it. 4, I really like it. 3, I like it. 2, did not like it. 1, hated it. And this must have been a Geek Brunch week based on the titles that I'm seeing. There were a total of 39, 10 Valiant, 8 Image, 20 DC, and 1 Chapter House. Starting at the 3 out of 5s, we have Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Number 78. And this was a space camp story. Usually the Scooby-Doos don't score above a 3, but man, they are good reads, like right before bed. It's like a calming factor. Been really stressed at work, and that's probably why I'm like bobbling and like not thinking of the right words to say. I'm just exhausted, man. My brain is fried. I learned something interesting today, though, about remote procedure calls. We have trying to make calls between Unix and Linux, and use this RPC, and we're switching over to POSIX RPC instead of a DCA, or I forget what it's called. And it's a way for you to call something on another box, and you write a program on the client side and the server side, and you remote procedure call that. And you can do a lot of different things. And it's transparent to the user about the operating system, and it obfuscates that. And the other thing that it's really nice is one thing that when you're playing around with cross platforms, you learn about big Indian and little Indian, and it's the way bytes are stored from left to right or right to left. And if you send over, like from Linux to Unix is different. So if you send over like a number, it won't be the right number if you get it on the other side unless you handle it yourself. And one thing that's nice about RPC is that it does it for you. It does all that crap for you, so you don't have to worry about it. Really cool thing, and what you end up doing is you write this interface definition language, and you define it in like a C struct. Like you define your structs, your enums, all your different things, and it's more C oriented than object oriented, so it's more sequential. A matter of fact, if you have a class, you'll have to convert it to a struct of some sort before you pass it on. But It is a cool mechanism. And what I learned today, and I learned it the hard way, is that when you do an RPC gen, if you don't use a certain flag, it assumes one argument. So I was compiling this thing, and this thing was driving me crazy. I was getting an error. Only allows one argument. And I'm like, in programming, you could pass to a method many arguments. But by default, RPC just wants to pass one argument and then return the value back as the return code. So, like, if you wanted to return a structure back, that would be your return. Anyway, I'm boring you all with it, but I found out you needed to use a certain flag to switch it to C proper on the RPC while you're compiling it. So it was kind of interesting, but I was exhausted at the end of the day. So, where did I leave off? Scooby-Doo, where are you? Blue Beetle number 6 was a 3 out of 5. Jaime and his mother learn that it's Dan Garrett Scarab. Dan Garrett is the original Blue Beetle, and it's hard to remove. Goes after the villain from the previous issue and ends up in a fight with Dr. Fate. And if you remember DC Universe Rebirth, I believe it tied in the Scarab with Dr. Fate, and this kind of continued on with it. So you got Teen Titans number 5. We have the Titans convince the League of Assassins team that they're being manipulated by Ra's al Ghul. And now have a Titans Tower in San Francisco. We have Curse Words number 1. This is Image. And a wizard comes down to destroy Earth, and God sent down to destroy him when he decides he wants to make a magic business. So this wizard comes down and is using his magic to form a business and make monetary value with him. And they don't like it that much. So, we have Justice League of America. Now we go to the 4 out of 5s. This was number 1, and this was the team that was assembled to go after the extremists. If you remember, the extremists are like the villains of the villain counterparts of the Marvel Universe. So they have like a Sabretooth knockoff. They have Lord Havoc, who's which one does he map to? I can't remember if it's Doctor Doom, but they all have their counterparts. The mysticism ones, Doctor Strange, Nightmare. Who else do they have? They have a Doctor Octopus knockoff, and there's a few others. And they became really popular with by Bart Sears, Justice League Europe, and they had their own series there. I can't remember if it was like Final Crisis, The Extremist. It was tied into some event, and they're the villains, and the new Justice League is after them. We have Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. Saint Walker ends up saving Kyle and Hal. Guy goes after the biggest Sinestro Corps member without John's permission. And he's kind of like one of the head lanterns. So, guy breaks away from the commands that he's told not to do. That was a good issue. Detective Comics 951. This is Shiva and the Assassins attack Gotham. I'm really behind in Detective Comics. I got to get back on it. The civilians seem to be Jokerized, but are not. And Colonel Kane reminds them of the dangers of coming to Gotham. We have a Suicide Squad number 12. There's a funeral for Amanda Waller. Harley thinks Deadshot made the kill, actually killed Amanda Waller, and the squad fights Rustam, Raven, Manticore, and Dejin. Two of which were in the original Suicide Squad. We have Flash number 17. This is versus the Rogues and the new Cap, the Cold Gun, powered by Speed Force. That's Captain Cold's gun. He's captured and put into Iron Heights for. What did I say here? Man, I don't even know what I said. Captured, but in Iron Heights for Super Rogues Group. I don't know what the hell they what I'm writing. I gotta start being more careful with my writing on these things, these write-ups, because I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. Wonder Woman number 17. This is Veronica Kale turns Barbara Minerva back into Cheetah in exchange for not destroying Etta Candy. Trevor and Ferdinand are in the story. Ferdinand is that he's like part bull. And then Ferdinand returns the lasso to Diana. That was a good issue too. I like that one. I'm also behind in that. Deathstroke number 13. Deathstroke sleeping with Jericho's fiance, which is pretty fucked up. Gains objects to destroy wife Adeline, which is Deathstroke's wife, but then destroys them. Fights Raptor and Red Lion. And we do see Raptor. He's the one that's in Nightwing. So in the Rebirth Nightwing. We have Batgirl number 8. They have it's date night with Cobblepot. That's Cobblepot's son. Cobblepot runs a company that has an app for protection services as you walk home. Like you can bring up an app and say, I don't want to walk home alone, and somebody will come by and walk you home to protect you. It's like a security blanket app. They have Magpie, if you remember from Legends, back in the long time ago. This is a new version of her in the Rebirth. That was a really good issue. I think the Batgirl Cobblepot series started off much stronger than it ended. From Image, we have Cannibal number 1. A hurricane freezes ancient mosquitoes, which cause an outbreak of yellow fever. A company developed a cure but caused cannibalism. It centers around a family that owns a bar. That was a really good issue. Action Comics 974. Superman tries to help Superwoman in Rejuve armor. Clark proposes to Lois and flips out when he finds out she is married and has a kid. Oh, I remember. This is the if you remember in Action Comics, it was weird because you had Superman, which is the old post-crisis Superman, and he's with his Lois. And all of a sudden, when the rebirth came, there was another Clark running around, and you learn later on who that Clark is, but he's not really Clark. And he gets jealous because he wants to be with Lois. We got Batman Beyond number 5. Bruce Wayne is alive, and with Terry, Joker is alive and takes out Terminal. We have Batgirl Volume 1, 1 through 6. She fails to save a man, and Batman's mad, but Oracle protects her. Batman sees a videotape of her killing a man, and she has a smile, so he investigates the tape. A telepath touches Cassandra, and she loses it. So this is the Cassandra Batgirl, and I think I reread 1 through 6. It's not my first time. It was in the trade, you know. I just reread that trade. We have Moonshine number 1. This is 1920s Prohibition. A gangster finds he wants to team with a Appalachian family to make hooch. Federal agents killed by a werewolf in the mountains and believed to be the son of the moonshine maker. Gangster sends a guy to try to make a deal with the moonshine maker, but he turns it down. That's Moonshine number 1. I think that's Azzarello that's writing that, if I remember correctly. Dante number 1. This was really good. It was my top 4 out of 5, the last 4 out of 5. It was an assassin with a normal life, wants to retire from the business. He has to train his replacement, but is betrayed, tries to get away, but shoots a woman's grandchild, and she puts a curse on him. He has a tattoo for everyone he killed or wronged, and has to redeem it for it to be removed. He rescued his friend's daughter from a prostitution ring and had to help her off of drugs to remove the Raven tattoo. his family has been captured. So it's basically somebody he wronged, and he has a tattoo for every wrong, and the only way he can get rid of the tattoos is through redemption. Now we get into the 5 out of 5s. A lot of Valiant here. We have Harbinger Renegade. This one's been not received well by some people, but I like it. This is Rafer Roberts. This is Team versus Solomon. And this is Derek. Who's the writer? Derek Robinson. He also did Dante, which is really interesting. And his art in Dante was much better than it is in Harbinger Renegade. So it's the Team versus Solomon, and he escapes the great art. It's great art with Jose Rip, and the team seems defeated. So some of these scenes are done by Jose Rip, and some of them are done by Derek Robertson, if I remember correctly. It's like the flashback scenes are by one, and the current scenes are by another. Team seems defeated, and Solomon tries to convince Chris of his cause. Torque is in the hospital but heals. The team defeats the Psyots and Solomon with Peter. And Jay Tucker is activated by Peter, so he becomes a Psyot. From Chapter House, we have Die Kitty Die number 4. This is really cool. This is about like an Archie-like character. And she's got powers, and it's like one of those things where she's in the comic, but in the comic she has a comic. Like that's she's trying to keep her comic alive. This is Kitty versus the previous husbands, her previous husbands from previous issues, as they set up a trap for her. We have Commandy Challenge number 2, which I just wrapped up. I enjoyed that series, but I'm not sure I liked how they concluded it. Like, I get it. I get what they're going for, but I wish they would have concluded it in a more sensible way instead of a surreal way. Sorry, but I was getting really thirsty. I'm getting really tired. It's only 9:30, but I'm ready to pass out. We have in this particular issue, Commandy tries to defuse a bomb, finds out the apes are in the nuke as a Trojan horse. Commandy in Mentron Mobius chair with Tufton and Canis, Dr. Canis that is, end up in San Diego with manhunters who hunt man. Renato Jones, the 1%, number 2 through 5. I wonder if I counted that right. I hope I did. He goes after the 1% and finds the Black Widow woman who is doing a similar thing, another assassin hired to go after Ming Ming and find out why everyone was dead on the yacht, establishes a relationship with his rich girlfriend and how evil her father is. That I Renato Jones was a real surprise for me. There's still that second volume I need to read. And at the top of the list, we have a series that is unpopular with a lot of Valiant fans, but it was very good for me. Generation Zero, number 2 through 5. They hire Gen Zero to help with the murder of her friend. The Psyots go undercover and in a school and find the killer. They go in the cheerleader's mind to see if she did it. It's like an Archie-like world, like Archie Comics. What else is interesting in there? Father of the daughter's cop gets armed up to go after Gen Zero and attacked by a white-faced villain. Maybe they might be aliens. But this was a really cool series. It's like troubled teens can reach out to the Gen Zero team, and this whole town is effed up. And the Gen Zero team gets there and has to deal with some weird ass shit. And I became fond of the Gen Zero team only to find out that in Harbinger Renegade something happens to them. So that was the last 5 out of 5. To summarize the 5 out of 5s, we have Harbinger Renegade 3 and 4, Die Kitty Die number 4, Commandy Challenge number 2, Renato Jones and the 1%, 2 through 5, and Generation Zero, 2 through 5. So if you look at a lot of the things at the top were Valiant or Image, 1DC, and 1 Chapter House. And it could be that they were so high because of sheer quantity. Like, I might not have rated Gen Zero 2, 3, 4, 5 as good as I did if I read them in singles from month to month, but because I consumed them all at once, it was a 5 out of 5. Renato Jones, the same thing. I read 2 through 5, so I consumed it all at once. And then Harbinger Renegade, I consumed 2 issues. So I think what you'll see is if I read more, or read it more like a trade, I tend to like it more because I get more story out of it. So thank you for listening. You have been listening to Mike M's Weekly Reads. I'm exhausted, and you can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can send me e That's where you can send me email. On the Twitters, it's at Mike Myers Brunch. On Facebook, you can go to Geek Brunch Podcast with spaces in there and click the like button and follow all the episode threads there. We are at geekbrunchpodcast.com and all the episode things are there and you can comment on there. You can leave an iTunes review on iTunes and I greatly appreciate it. If you do leave an iTunes review, make sure, and it's on Geek Brunch Podcast, make sure you let me know which show it is that you're commenting on. So if it's Geek Brunch Retro, if it's Mike M's Weekly Reads, or if it's Geek Brunch, that'd be very helpful. And keep questions coming because I will talk about them. I didn't solicit for any questions this episode, but I had some stuff to talk about, which is good. But you could send questions at any time, and I will archive them off. And I will answer them in a future episode. So again, thanks for listening, and we'll see ya. Bye.